Hello and welcome back to the Cool Your Jets podcast. I am Michael Nania, coming to you at 8:38 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday, March 11th, 2026, nearly 48 hours since the NFL's legal tampering window opened at 12 o'clock on Monday. The Jets, of course, jumped into the action a little bit earlier than that with the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade, kicking off what has been an extremely eventful first 2 days of free agency here. Jets are up to 8 additions through 2 days, 6 on the first day, 2 yesterday, 7 of those 8 additions being defensive, 2 of those being via trade, if you include, of course, the quarterback they added yesterday, which we will get into. Some players out the door as well, including a couple on the offensive line, a key special teams player. All of that we discussed in our day one recap, but today we're going to recap the less eventful but still very important day two that the Jets had. Of course, the headliner, trading for Geno Smith, who is now penciled in to be the Jets' starting quarterback in week one, and we'll see what happens from here. There are still some rumblings that the Jets could add another veteran to compete with Geno. Carson Wentz is a name that has generated plenty of buzz. So we'll see if that transpires. We'll see what the Jets do in the draft. Does this mean that, you know, maybe they have a bigger quarterback move than expected planned for the draft? Do they trade up and take Ty Simpson late first? Do they take him 16? Do they strike in the second round on someone that they like? All of that remains to be seen. But as we sit here today, if aliens attacked the Earth and said, look, if the Jets can't beat us in a football game today, we're taking over your planet, Geno Smith would be at quarterback for that game. And look, if I told you 13 years ago, although not precisely because the draft didn't happen yet, but let's say 12 years and 10 months ago, that Geno Smith would be the Jets starting quarterback in 2026, I think you would be ecstatic. I think I would be ecstatic if you told me that. But circumstances are a little bit different than we probably expected had we been presented with that scenario way back in 2013, a bygone era of football, of life in general. I mean, it just the, those words, those numbers in that order, 2013 is it's ancient. That's ancient times. But here's Geno Smith back in New York, projected to be the Jets' starting quarterback. And look, it's not thrilling. It's not exciting. And it's easy to write jokes about. And look, I didn't want to be here. I just talked about this in the previous episode. I wanted the Jets to make an aggressive pursuit of Kyler Murray. I thought he was the last and only veteran option who could have given the Jets a realistic chance of competing for the playoffs this year, which, as we talked about in the previous episode, I think that should be the goal, regardless of how realistic you think that may be. As an organization, as a franchise, that should be the goal. And with their defensive signings, a lot of older players, short-term deals, it feels like that is the goal, to win more games and to obviously, as the end goal of that, pursue a playoff spot. So I thought Kyler Murray was the last available option to do that. The Jets, at this point, obviously are not going to get him. But who knows? He may have had absolutely no interest in coming to the Jets. The Jets may have done their best to reach out to him. Maybe they did make an aggressive offer. We probably won't get any of this information, but it feels reasonable to assume that Kyler Murray at this stage of his career would not be interested in coming to the Jets. I just hope that the Jets made a good faith effort, because look, with Geno Smith at quarterback and whoever else you throw in to compete with them, whether that's Wentz, and then you throw a potential rookie in there who, regardless of how you feel about Ty Simpson or any of the late round options in this draft, none of those guys are going to give the Jets a strong chance of competing this year or even being the franchise guy in the long term, because it's just not a good class. Considering all of that, it doesn't feel like the Jets, even with as much as I like what they've done on defense, it does not feel like that the team overall is positioned to improve that much when they're still this limited at the quarterback position, because that's ultimately what it comes down to. You know, we talk about all these one-year turnarounds in the league. You look at what the Jaguars did last year, the Bears, the Patriots. None of those teams do that if they don't have a quarterback who's capable of leaping as much as Drake May did, Trevor Lawrence, Caleb Williams. So, you know, I think it's fair to say on paper the Jets defense is a lot better. I think you could even say they've gone from, let's say, league worst, if not second worst this past season, to now you look at this, and if they're well coached or at least competently coached, this could be a league average defense. But even with that, if you don't, you know, if you still have league worst quarterback play, which I think it's fair to say the Jets are still on track for that, or at least close to it, it's hard to win games. So I talked about this in the last episode. I really think the Jets need to win a lot of games this year. And you know, that's relatively speaking, meaning 7, 8, 9, a serious push for a wild card spot, competitive overall play, just within the quality of those wins and losses. I think that is essential for them to take that next step. I know they don't have the quarterback yet, and they're not going to compete for a Super Bowl until they do. But at some point, this team just has to win some games and break free of the losing culture that is deeply embedded within that building at this point. Just the here we go again mentality that consumes them. Anytime they have a losing streak, anytime something goes wrong, there are bad headlines in the media, everything just spirals out of control. And that's the culture in this building. And until they break free of that by actually winning games, regardless of who's that quarterback, the talent on the roster, who the coach is, until the wins are actually there, it's going to be difficult to break free of that. So I really would like to see the Jets have a successful season this year, and it's just hard to buy into that with the quarterback situation. But having said all of that, it's not as if the Jets had many options here. You didn't get the first overall pick in basically a one quarterback class. And the free agent class isn't good. It's weak. There's not a lot you could do about it. And the same goes for the trade market. There's just not much out there that's all that much better than Geno Smith. And look, the Jets get him for a 20 spot drop late on the third day of the draft. So that's essentially nothing. And we didn't get the exact contract numbers yet, but it's a restructured deal for what is being reported as close to the league minimum. So they basically gave up about as little as you possibly could for Geno Smith, which, you know, given all the concerns that he brings to the table, is a fair price. And he's coming in to compete, potentially be a bridge quarterback for a year, and he doesn't do anything to hamper the future. So all things considered, I can't complain or really say that there's much else the Jets could have done besides potentially getting Kyler Murray. But like we said, we don't know how that went down, how interested Murray even is in the Jets, or how realistic that even was. So outside of getting Murray, I don't really see what else the Jets could do here besides just stay cheap at quarterback, not hinder their future, and just, you know, basically punt the franchise quarterback pursuit to next year. Unfortunately, the reality of that is that it's hard to see the Jets being all that great this year, even with the defensive upgrades that I think they've made. And I think they've done a fantastic job on that side of the ball with their signings. But, you know, if your quarterback situation isn't there, it's difficult to win games. That's just the reality of the NFL. But it is also the harsh reality of the situation the Jets are in. There's just not much the Jets could have done. So that's kind of where I stand on it. Look, I'm not going to be super optimistic about Geno and say he'll get back to being the Pro Bowler he was a couple years ago, or that, you know, the nostalgia of it is amazing. I'm throwing my hands up, you know, celebrating the 12 wins that he got for the Jets over a decade ago. You know, the Jets wanted us all to sing Take Me Home, West Virginia, just because they signed the guy who led the league in interceptions last year. So I'm not getting all optimistic, but I'm also not, you know, criticizing the team as much as, you know, I think it's easy to make jokes about this signing, because being realistic, it's just the best that they could do. So you get a bridge quarterback, stopgap quarterback for a league minimum salary, a minimal pick swap on the third day of the draft. You can't really complain about it. too much given the available options. Now, it would be different if the Jets had, you know, more aggressive options available to them and they just decided to throw their hands up and sign Geno Smith, but that's not the world we live in. This is really all they could do. And it is unfortunate given that we're so starved to see a winner, we're so starved to see just competent quarterback play, regardless of how the team plays. So it's unfortunate given those, you know, where the Jets franchise is at, but that's just the reality of the options available. So not too high or too low on this signing. I mean, there's really nothing to be excited about, in my opinion, but there's also nothing to really knock them for. So let's talk about Geno Smith as a player, though, because this is the guy who's currently projected to start for the Jets in week one at quarterback. And like I said, I think this is a team that wants to win games this year. Aaron Glenn obviously does to save his job, but even the organization as a whole, I don't think they're quote-unquote tanking or anything like that. I mean, you look at their defensive additions. If they were truly tanking, I don't think you make the type of moves that they made over there. They do want to win some games. They just didn't want to, you know, attach themselves to any long-term salary at quarterback that would, you know, hamper their ability to make moves there in the future. But let's talk about Geno. There is very solid potential return on investment here, a good ceiling relative to what they got him for. Because if you rewind the clock a year, this is a guy who was coming off of a three-season run in Seattle where he was fourth in the league in passing yards, had a 27-22 record, above 500 each of those 3 years, and made the Pro Bowl twice. That would be probably the best three-year run of a, let's say second best three-year run of a Jets quarterback in team history. Give it to Broadway Joe because he has a Super Bowl in there, although he was inconsistent year to year. But what type of three-year run at quarterback have the Jets seen like that? And this is not long ago. 1 year ago, this is what he was coming off of when he went to Las Vegas. So that ceiling is there, and that's why it is, you know, relative to, I think, Carson Wentz, Jacoby Brissett, some of these guys, probably, this is why it is probably their best option among the players they could have targeted to fill this role of a cheap stopgap. And again, we'll see who gets thrown in there to potentially compete with him. But for now, with him being their prioritized target, the first guy they add, they give up a pick swap to get him before he gets free agency. I think it makes sense to prioritize Geno because he does have that ceiling of, you know, this is basically, as we sit here, three of the past four seasons, he was above 500. He had above average passing numbers, average to above average across the board. And that was three consecutive seasons just, you know, as of a year ago. So given that, for the price they got him, there is a ceiling here. And, you know, you could talk about the Raiders supporting cast, and there are a lot of fair excuses you could make, you know, laughable coaching staff with Pete Carroll, head coach, Chip Kelly at OC, who didn't even make it to the end of the year. Brutal offensive line. They were bottom five rated in most pass blocking categories. Their run game was in every single category the single worst. So, you know, weapons weren't the greatest. He had Bowers, but Bowers missed some games. Jacoby Myers traded midway through the season, and that's about all they had. So a lot of excuses there, you know, fair excuses to explain away his play to where you can maybe say he comes to the Jets, better offensive line, better weapons. Maybe he'll get back to his Seahawks form. Maybe last year it was just a byproduct of that situation as opposed to him actually playing worse. You could make that argument. So this is a nice ceiling relative to the expectations here. A cheap 35-year-old stopgap quarterback that you acquired for basically nothing. And he's coming in here with the ceiling of, you know, he could be an above 500 quarterback. He's done it three of the past four seasons. So that does exist. And I think that has to be part of the conversation with Geno Smith here. The problem for me, why I was low on him coming into this process before they acquired him, and why I still sit here pessimistic about him actually having that sort of bounce back or being any better than the nearly league worst quarterback that he was last year, The reason for all that is he just looked like he was physically cooked last year. He's 35 years old. He's going to be 36 this year. So it's not out of the question that he just hit the physical and athletic wall that quarterbacks often hit at this stage of their career. You know, it's impressive that he's made it this far. A lot of quarterbacks don't. And that's because they hit the wall at a certain point. And some of them, it's later than others. You know, with more famous, well-known quarterbacks who are extremely talented and successful, like your Peyton Mannings and Brady's, some of them it happens, you know, late 30s, even into the 40s. But, you know, with regular quarterbacks who aren't Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, it often happens mid-30s. And Geno Smith will be 36 this year. It's not out of the question that he just hit the wall and is not going to recover. And I think there are some very daunting numbers that support that, most notably being his pressure to sack rate. So basically, this number tells you how often, when a quarterback is pressured, does he allow it to turn into a sack? So it's a good number for evaluating a combination of two things. Can they get the ball out quickly and on time? And can they evade defenders and turn potential sacks into, you know, either a scramble, a legitimate passing attempt, or at the very least, a throwaway? So pressure to sack rate is a great metric for evaluating how a quarterback deals with pressures. And, you know, just to show you some of the top guys in this metric last year, top four lowest pressure to sack rates in 2025. Number one, Brock Purdy, who is clearly very elusive with the ball. Bo Nix, number two. Caleb Williams, number three, probably the most well-known sack evader in the league last year. And Jordan Love, number four. So it's a good metric for understanding how does this quarterback respond when he's pressured. It's a pretty good measure of release speed and just general athleticism. So Geno Smith, pressure to sack rate in 2025, 25.9%, highest in the entire league out of 38 qualified quarterbacks. That's really bad. If you're getting sacked on over a quarter of the plays in which you're pressured, that's detrimental to the team. So yes, he got pressured a lot behind that offensive line, but when the pressure did come, he was very poor at mitigating it because he was getting sacked more than one out of every four times, which you compare that to some of the top quarterbacks in the league, those guys are around 10%. So we're talking about one out of every 10 pressures turning into a sack versus one out of every four for Geno Smith. And that's a massive difference. Now, here's why this matters. Geno Smith was really good in this area as of just a couple of years ago. And he's generally been trending down year over year, which, you know, paints the picture of a guy who's physically declining. So in 2023 with the Seahawks, his pressure to sack rate was 13.9%. That was fifth best in the league. 2024 takes a 6% drop to 19.9%, all the way down to 20th, so middle of the pack. And then this year takes another 6% drop to 25.9%. That was the worst in the league. So that year over year decline in this specific metric that's very closely tied to a quarterback's, you know, athleticism and just overall physical ability, to me, suggests that he's just falling off physically. And look, I'm not going to say I watched Raiders all 22 very closely throughout the season. Obviously, in the coming weeks and months, I'll get deeper into Geno's film now that he's here. But just from the little I watched of the Raiders last year, I already had this hypothesis that he was, you know, did not look as mobile or agile as he typically has. And Geno's never been a world-class athlete or anything, but his mobility has always been an important part of his game. You know, he's never been a run-first quarterback, but he's always been a threat to scramble, especially in the red zone, and just generally has good mobility within the pocket. But this past season, he looked like a statue, and the numbers back it up. So that's why I looked at those numbers in the first place, is because I had that initial thought of, like, you know, I feel like when I watched him this past year, he was always getting sacked when the pressure got home. He was not scrambling as much as I'm used to seeing him scramble. And the numbers back it up. And that goes to his rushing too. So this past season, he averaged 7.3 rushing yards per game, 2.7 per attempt, and had zero rushing touchdowns. All of those numbers are career lows for him in seasons where he was a primary starter. And you go back to 2022, just 3 years ago or 3 years earlier, he was at 21.5 rushing yards per game on 5.4 yards per attempt. So double the yards per rush attempt, basically triple the rushing yards per game. And in a three-year span, he's declined that much in terms of rushing production. And again, that's not to say that he needs to be an elite rusher to be a great quarterback. It's just that the decline in his rushing frequency and efficiency points to a player who's less athletic or gradually becoming less athletic as he gets into his mid-30s here. So you combine those two things, the gradual decline in the sacks that he takes when he's pressured and the gradual decline in his rushing. And that paints a picture to me of a guy who, you know, as bad as his supporting cast was, a guy who also just might not have it anymore and might not be capable of getting back to where he was with the Seahawks. Even in a perfect world where the Jets situation is much better than the Raiders, which, you know, we don't even know that yet, given Frank Reich at offensive coordinator is a huge question mark. Aaron Glenn at head coach, huge question mark. So we don't even know if this coaching staff is better. And the weapons are still a question. We still don't know what's going on at receiver past Garrett Wilson. And it's, you know, presumably they'll draft someone early in the top 45, but you don't know how good that rookie is going to be. And, you know, Breece Hall has durability concerns in his career. Mason Taylor has potential, but we'll see how good he turns out to be. So even in the perfect world where the Jets supporting cast is better, Geno Smith might just not be the player that he was in Seattle. Even with it being only 2 years ago, there's a lot of evidence that he's just physically not the same guy. And if you can't move in the NFL to a requisite level, if you're a complete statue, there's just not really a place for that type of quarterback in today's league anymore. So all of that is to say, I'm not super optimistic that Geno is going to be any better than he was last year, but that ceiling does exist. So we'll see if he can get back to that Seattle form. If maybe the stuff that happened in Vegas was a product of the surroundings, maybe he's not as physically declined as, you know, I'm projecting him to be based on these numbers. That could still be the case, but, you know, based on all the evidence that I can see here, what I'm looking at, and what I saw from watching him last year. And another thing is a lot of the interceptions he threw, and he did have some tips and unlucky ones. Genty had a really bad drop that turned into an interception, but he did throw a lot of really bad ones where they were just bad reads, bad decisions, and he looked like the Jets version of himself. And, you know, maybe that regresses to the mean because, you know, in Seattle, he was pretty decent at avoiding interceptions. 2.1% of his passes were picks with the Seahawks from 22 to 24, 3.8 with the Raiders. So you're talking almost double the interception frequency. So maybe that goes down, but it also goes back to the athleticism thing. You know, if he cannot evade defenders or break the pocket as smoothly and quickly as he used to, it could have prompted him to attempt dangerous throws that in the past he may have decided to scramble and extend the play and either throw that ball away or rush for a few yards, make something happen outside the pocket. But if he can't get outside the pocket as well as he used to, it's going to lead to some more dangerous throws that don't need to be attempted. So I think that interception number might not be as fixable or as likely to regress to the mean as it may seem based on the athleticism decline. So there is a ceiling with Geno Smith. We'll see if it ultimately gets blamed on the Raiders supporting cast, if the Jets can upgrade over that. And, you know, maybe he hasn't declined as much as some of these numbers suggest. But personally, I'm not super optimistic about that. I think these numbers are very daunting. And I think most likely he'll be similar, potentially slightly better than he was last year. And look, the Jets feel similarly. If they didn't, you know, he wouldn't have been acquired for a moderate pick swap and a league minimum salary with the Raiders eating most of his contract just to get rid of him after 1 year. So not super optimistic about Geno being a difference maker for the Jets this year compared to Justin Fields and last year's quarterback room. But there is a ceiling there, and that should be acknowledged. So hopefully he does hit that, because I would love to see, it would be a great redemption story for him to come back to the Jets and have a successful season and maybe be the guy to break the playoff drought that started before he was even there. It would be an amazing story, and that ceiling does exist. I'm just personally not very confident that it's going to be hit. And look, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter, because he's here to just be a cheap stopgap for a season, and then obviously the Jets hopefully want to get their franchise quarterback next year. Okay, Jets did make another signing on defense yesterday. Nashawn Wright, Pro Bowl cornerback from the Bears. And I actually wrote an article about why the Jets shouldn't sign him a couple weeks ago, but that was under the assumption that he was going to be a big ticket, high teens salary type of player over 3 years. I was not on board for that, but the Jets get him for 1 year up to $5.5 million. And I'm 100% on board for him at this salary, because the thing with Wright, the appeal is obvious. He had 5 interceptions, 2 forced fumbles, 3 fumble recoveries, incredible numbers just in general, but especially valuable for a team that had 4 takeaways last year. So obvious appeal with him. But the problem is he's a 1 year wonder. First 4 years of his career, backup, special teamer, didn't really carve out a role on defense. And that's as a third round pick. So he had every opportunity to do so and just couldn't impress enough to get on the field. And then suddenly he has this breakout year based on interceptions. It really screams to me something that's not sustainable. And that's why I wasn't on board for multi-year expensive salary. But at 1 year, $5.5 million, you throw him in to the Jets cornerback competition, push Brandon Stevens, push Azaria Thomas, and gamble that maybe this production is for real. And for that low level of risk, it's definitely worth it for the potential reward that he brings to the table. I think you look at the Jets cornerback room right now, Brandon Stevens, $12 million salary, veteran. They signed him last year, and look, he had a decent season in some ways. He wasn't beaten as frequently as he was with the Ravens. He tackled pretty well, supported the run, but at the end of the day, he did allow 8 touchdowns into his coverage while picking off 0 passes, and that is just not acceptable for a starting outside corner. So I do think you have basically a 3-man competition for 2 spots now between Wright, Azaria Thomas, and Brandon Stevens. And hopefully Thomas can win one of those spots. Third round rookie, a young one too. He's still only 21 years old. Showed a lot of promise, but definitely some rookie bumps in there. So you're hoping to see some development from him in his second season. But Jets needed competition at that spot, because both of those projected starters in Thomas and Stevens bring uncertainty to the table in different ways. So Wright comes in here and he gives you a lot of upside on a low-risk contract. But I think the question everyone has, especially Bears fans maybe, is, why did this guy sign a 1-year, $5.5 million deal if he just had a Pro Bowl season at age 27 with, 10 total picks, forced fumbles, and fumble recoveries? Well, he got beat a lot in coverage. That's the answer, and that's a big part of, why I don't think he was worth a lucrative multi-year deal. But So here are the coverage numbers for Wright from Pro Football Focus last year. But he allowed 725 yards and 7 touchdowns. Both were 5th most among cornerbacks. And he's one of only 2 corners in the league to allow 700 yards and 7 touchdowns into his coverage. And he also had 8 penalties. So he was the only cornerback by himself to allow 700 plus yards, 7 plus touchdowns, and commit 8 plus penalties. So the mistakes are there. He's a boom or bust, gamble type guy. Those picks did not come without a cost. He was giving a lot of plays back. And, the proof is in the pudding here. NFL teams are starting to get smart enough to realize that you don't just pay guys for their interceptions. The entire body of work is what matters. you have to pay guys based on how well do you do your job in each play. And that's why Sauce got the contract that he did. I mean, Nashawn Wright comes out of nowhere here and has more picks in one season for the Bears than Sauce Gardner has in three or four NFL seasons, actually. So Sauce, though, despite the interceptions, play to play is dominant and just does his job in coverage at an extremely consistent degree. And that, to me, is where the impact really comes at corner. As much as we love takeaways and interceptions, and they do change games, from the player's perspective, I want to know how well do you do your job each play? And a guy like Wright just isn't doing that at the highest level. So that's why he didn't get a multi-year deal. It's why he's only here on a one-year flyer for a cheap number, too. But the upside is tremendous. Because, look, if you can pick off five passes a year and throw in five forced fumbles and fumble recoveries, yeah, there's a ton of value in that. It's a difficult thing to sustain, and that's why it doesn't get players paid as much as it may have in the past before we had more access to coverage statistics and things like that. Because interceptions are volatile. It's really hard to control that as a corner. How often are you targeted? And what type of passes get thrown at you? Because, you know, sometimes you get lucky and quarterbacks throw bad passes into your lap or a tip falls into your lap. And, you know, sometimes that doesn't happen and there's not much you can do about it. So interceptions are important for the team as a whole. And, you know, the more pressure you get, the tighter your coverage is. As a team, those should generally, you know, come in bunches as you do those things well, as you establish those habits. But for players as individuals, it's really difficult to rack up takeaways consistently. So if that's the only thing you brought to the table in a certain season, it's just not going to get you paid. Because going back to Sauce, like the coverage and the consistency from snap to snap for hundreds of coverage snaps, you know, getting pass breakups, not allowing receptions, not allowing touchdowns, that is sustainable because it's indicative of you just executing rep to rep. So that basically summarizes why Wright signed the contract that he did, despite the flashy box score takeaway production on paper. And for these reasons, I love the contract for the Jets because, you know, at 1 year, $5.5 million, if he goes out there and has another five picks, then sweet. You know, that's great value for 1 year, $5.5 million. And then you could have conversations about, do we view this as worthy of a multi-year deal now that he's done it twice in a row? But at this stage, just 1 year of production, it's hard to buy into it long term. And for the Jets, you get high upside competition in your cornerback room for a low risk deal. So I actually love this contract, despite the fact that I wrote an article about why they shouldn't sign this guy. He's now one of my favorite contracts. And that comes down to the price, because look, every player has a price. You know, I can talk all day about players I think got overpaid, or, you know, going into a free agency, I could write about players I don't think the Jets should sign or players I think they should sign, but everyone's got a price. So if you come in well below your price, great value. If you come in well above, even if you're a good player, but you get overpaid, not a great value. So this is great value. Another part of Wright's game that I think should be mentioned is that he is a good run support corner. That is a nice floor raising kind of skill for him, because I know we talked about how he has the takeaway production but made a lot of mistakes in coverage, but it's not like the takeaways are the only thing that he brings to the table. He does bring good run support. He had the second most run stops among corners last year, 14 of those, that's a pretty big number for a corner. You're talking about almost once a game he's stuffing a run by the line of scrimmage. And this is an outside corner, not a slot corner. So good run support guy, 6'4", 200 pounds. He gets dirty at the line of scrimmage. And the Jets are loading up on guys who could do that. They started with Jarvis Brownlee last year. I think Stevens counts, even though his coverage is questionable. He definitely is a willing tackler. And then this free agency, you get Demario Davis. You get guys like Devondre Sweat, David Onyemata, Joseph Asai, Minkah Fitzpatrick, obviously. Just a lot of physicality and tackling in this Jets defense. So this unit was really soft last year. They missed a lot of tackles. It felt like they were getting pushed around. I don't think that's going to happen this year. Does that mean they're going to be the best defense in the league or even top 10? Probably not, because they still don't have enough pass rush juice. And we'll see what they do with that second pick and how well that player, presumably an edge rusher, performs in the first season. But general lack of pass rush ceiling, and we'll still see what the cornerback position, the coverage there looks like. That's a question. So there are some ceiling limiting factors on this Jets defense, but they've plugged a lot of holes, and there is a general sense of excellent physicality, tackling, and run defense, all of which I think Wright contributes to. But a question with him is his consistency in coverage and whether he can replicate this one-year breakout of extremely good takeaway production. So Geno Smith and Nashon Wright, those were your day two free agent signings for the Jets. It's 9:15 a.m. on the East Coast here as we speak, and at this point, the Jets have not added to that collection just yet. I'll also address the re-signing of Andrew Beck. I'm not sure I talked about that one yet. Maybe I did, but if not, quick recap. Love this. We talked about how it was questionable if the Jets would re-sign him because the Frank Reich has never really used the fullback in his offense. But Jets go ahead and do it, and I like it. It's just showing an emphasis and a prioritization of maintaining the special team success that they had last year, because Beck was one of their best special teamers, especially as a blocker for the return unit. So a good re-signing there. But we could wrap this up with a little bit of talk about what the Jets still need to do. I think you got to start at the offensive line. Left guard is a hole that has to be filled. And not just to fill that hole, but also to increase draft flexibility, because, you know, say the Jets had the draft tomorrow with the roster as it stands, you have to get a left guard in either with that if not that 16th overall pick, where maybe you get Oliva, I'm gonna butcher his name, but Olavega, Ione, let's just call him Vega. So either you get Vega at 16, or, you know, with one of those early second round picks, you fill it, because right now Xavier Newman is your starting left guard, and that's just not. And I think he kind of has some potential, I guess, as like a decent back of the end guard, but he should not be starting. That hole has to be filled, and you fill it with the veteran placeholder before the draft, and now you have some flexibility. And, you know, Vega still might be the Jets' BPA at 16, and in that case, I don't think a, you know, 30-plus-year-old guard on a short-term deal, whoever that may be, is enough to preclude that pick if they love that player. But at least you don't have, you feel like you have to pick a guard to fill that spot. Right now, the only position that the Jets really have to pick in the top 45, you know, given the signings they made, they plugged a lot of defensive holes. They got bodies on the edge. They got competition at corner. They filled both starting safety spots. They filled out the defensive tackle position. A lot of holes plugged, so not really any necessities left on defense. The only necessity on the roster where they really have to pick someone in the top 45 to have a chance of being competitive this year is wide receiver. Well, wide receiver and left guard at this moment, but wide receiver, presumably, you're not going to get someone who checks that box before the draft. And we'll see if a trade comes in. You know, there were Brian Thomas rumors, but those were shot down by Adam Schefter yesterday. Maybe there's someone we're not talking about. But free agency-wise, the Jets are not filling that hole at this point. Juwan Jennings is still out there, but I would be shocked if the Jets, given Darren Mooji's approach to free agency through 2 years now, he's not paying over $20 million a year for Juwan Jennings. I highly doubt it. To this point, the most expensive contract he's given out in terms of APY for an outside free agent is still the 12 that he gave to Brandon Stevens for non-quarterbacks. And you could throw in Minka if you want to consider him a free agent. 13.3, a little bit higher. But he's avoided those big ticket signings so far. And I don't think he's going to deviate from that for Juwan Jennings, a good player, but not a superstar. So I think the Jets will make an addition at wide receiver. You know, whether that's one of these big name older guys like your, who's out there? You got DeAndre Hopkins, Tyler Lockett, kind of guys like that. Former stars who are way past their prime. Maybe they go for someone like a Jalen Tolbert, Curtis Samuel, just like placeholder veteran type guy. I think they'll add someone, but no one who changes their need for a wide receiver going into the draft. So wide receiver is going to end up being that one position where it's like, hey, you guys, I know best player available is the philosophy and all of that, but you have to draft a wide receiver. You got four picks in the top 45. One of them has to be a wideout. Ideally, that's 16th pick, but you don't know how the board's going to fall. Maybe you trade back up into the first round, but got to get one. Because after what we saw last year, the lack of depth past Garrett Wilson, it would be malpractice to go into another season with that. And that's why that position is going to be a necessity at this point, unless the Jets make a surprising trade for a legitimate wide receiver too. But left guard as of right now is on that list. But the Jets, as opposed to wide receiver, do have an opportunity to remedy that before the draft and give themselves some more flexibility and leave wide receiver as that only position they really have to address in the first two rounds of the draft. So plenty of veteran guards out there who could fill this hole for the short term. Wyatt Teller is probably my favorite option. But you also have Joel Bitonio, Kevin Zeitler, James Daniels. Those are just a few of the names, but you got to get someone in there who you could trust to at least be a competent starter for you, so you don't feel like you have to draft one in the first two rounds. So guard is a priority. Getting some depth at wide receiver is a priority, although I don't think anything splashy is going to happen there. I think slot corner is an underrated position that could use some competition. I like Jarvis Brownlee, but not someone who I think should be handed that job. You know, a lot of penalties, a lot of missed tackles and coverage mistakes, but you love that how hard he plays and how physical he is. So a young player who I think should also be pushed, just like at the outside cornerback position with Wright. I think maybe like a pass rushing defensive tackle or like a tweener D end. That's kind of something that the Jets are still lacking. They did get Kingsley Enagbare and Joseph Osai, two bodies on the edge, like average competent players who could fill out the rotation. But both of those guys are in that 260 range. So more like true edge rusher, outside linebacker types. But and the Jets also added to their interior D-line with David Onyemata. But the mold they haven't really touched yet is that kind of tweener D-end, D-tackle frame, like a John Franklin Myers with the Jets. Someone who's, you know, 280 to 290, someone who could kick inside and play some four-eye tech for you, or maybe he could play some base D-end. A guy like that with that type of versatility, they haven't really added yet. I don't have a specific player for you off the top of my head who fits that mold, but that's something I could look at them targeting. And then kicker. The Jets need a kicker because they let Nick Folk go for $4 million guaranteed. That one's tough. So still need a kicker. Slot corner competition. Maybe big D end, wide receiver depth, starting left guard, and potentially a center. I think Josh Myers is someone who should be pushed. It's not as big a necessity as the left guard because you absolutely need that. Like as much as I think Josh Myers should be upgraded over, he's not as problematic of a starter as Xavier Newman. You can live with it, but it's not ideal. So those are some of the positions I would put on the list. Left guard number one, but then depth and competition. Wide receiver, center, slot corner, big D end, and then, of course, they need a kicker. So those are a few of the spots I would look for the Jets to target here on day three and moving forward. Also, quarterback, obviously. Let's see if they add some competition for Geno. But that pretty much sums up my thoughts on day two of Jets free agency. Let's see what else they have in store. Thanks for listening.